Welcome to Solutions OP Clinical Trials Podcast. My name is Olga and I'm the Managing Director of Solutions OP. We are a small team of experienced professionals working on clinical trials in the United Kingdom. I'll use our podcast to discuss hot topics in clinical trials and provide analysis of the latest trends and challenges in pharma and medical device industries, not just in the UK, but globally. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to today's episode of the podcast. The topic today is the role of the nurse practitioner in clinical research, but also as a career path for nurses. While this role is has existed in the US for relatively few years, it's quite new in the UK and also not very popular in European Union countries. So for those who are not familiar, I hope they'll become familiar today with our discussion. So my guest today is Stephen Edmonds, who is advanced nurse practitioner in the sarcoma team at Royal Marsden Hospital in London. Stephen is very experienced and knowledgeable, working for years as a research nurse before moving into the role of nurse practitioner. He's currently working in clinical trials as a sub-investigator, and in addition, he has done quite extensive research on the requirements for nurse practitioners, which is part of your thesis. So I will ask my very first question for him to tell us more about that role. How do you become nurse practitioner? And who would qualify for that role?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting us on today, Olga. A pleasure to be able to speak on this, as you say, relatively new role in the UK within trials. Maybe just to start with a bit of context. So the concept of nurse practitioners or advanced practice nurses sort of grew out of a demand for increased healthcare professional coverage. Maybe as a shortage of doctors, mainly in the States in the 60s and in the UK following in the 70s. And as decades have rolled on, we're now seeing allied health professionals, so like pharmacy, physiotherapists, dietitians, so forth, taking on those more advanced skills that you might typically associate with a doctor. So things like diagnostics and prescribing medications and assessing patients using physical exam. So, as that's been an evolution, you'll find that there's a lot of, not surprisingly, it's a bit confusing for people because different terms have been used over the decades, and you've gone from nurse practitioners to advanced nurse practitioners, advanced clinical practitioners, allowing other non-medical health professionals under that umbrella. And I think the current trend is to move towards advanced practitioner, in the UK at least. And So that's a little background on the actual role. So that it's quite well established in most areas in the UK in the health system. And the biggest anomaly really is clinical trials and research. And, you know, I think traditionally we've always thought, oh, you can't do that because researchers, typically protocols are typical black and white. And so are our guidelines. And there are certain roles defined as a doctor would do. And a nurse would do other things. So things are changing. There are nurse practitioners in the US working in trials and have been for some time. I think ASCO predicted a shortage of oncologists back in 2015. And as a result, they grew their advanced practitioner workforce from 3,000 to over 10,000 nowadays. And there's a keen interest in trials with some people as investigators or principal investigators in some cases, I believe. Within the UK, we have a network of other senior nurses working as advanced practitioners, some at consultant level, all in trials. So we keep in touch with our colleagues in Birmingham and the Christie, for example, in Manchester. But we introduced this role after a period of development within our trust in 2022. So I'd already done the prescribing course qualification a few years prior to that, 3 or 4 years earlier than that. So it's been a work in progress and really a fruit of development, really. So you asked me, so yes, relatively new in trials yet. Could you tell me more about the role? Okay. So in my role, I am on the deviation logs as a sub-investigator. We also have doctors who are sub-investigators and principal investigators. And we really take a team approach anyway, so none of us are ever working complete isolation. We work in a team and we attend clinic as a team. I will see patients independently, I've reviewed them, assessed them, particularly in relation to their trial side effects and offering ideas, interventions that we can do to help manage their side effects so they can tolerate and stay on treatment for longer. To do that, I needed to complete a master's in advanced practice. And so I would say that who would qualify? Well, I think from our experience, there's about maybe five or six of us now, but we've all been research nurses before that, and we've had an interest in developing ourselves, and we've gone down the advanced practice route and applied it within trials. I haven't seen any colleagues who are already advanced practitioners in other areas coming into trials specifically. So we've already got the years of experience as research nurses and knowing the protocol and how things need to be documented from the trial monitoring side of things. So we can sort of bring those skills together. But yes, it does open up a possible new pathway for research nurse development.
So that's great. So it's basically like a career progression for nurses.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's kind of very limited in the research nurse world. There's limited avenues for progression. So this really does provide a new way of developing yourself, but also increasing your job satisfaction from being able to complete an episode of care for a patient completely, entirely. And then that also aids retention.
Oh yeah, that's
a key thing actually. I think you'll appreciate that from monitoring, from in terms of continuity, because our fellows come and go, but also our patients really, really value continuity and a familiar face. And it doesn't mean you have to see them all the time, but just knowing, even with the research nurse, because nurses tend to stay and doctors move through their training and move on to other areas unless they're consultants. So
yeah, no, that's true. That's very interesting what you say. It's actually, I had a clinical trial recently, I just wanted to discuss something, where we had, it was a drug which is approved already on the market, and one of the principal investigators was actually a nurse practitioner. So basically, in your role, you could be a principal investigator as well. Especially if you're talking about drugs where they're already approved on the market and you can prescribe them anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was very interesting because I had the questions there from the colleagues in European Union countries saying, well, is that person actually qualified to do the work? And I had to explain to them that actually, yes, they're fully qualified, and basically you can be a principal investigator as well, which I think is quite good. And maybe you have that opportunity in the future to...
Yeah, that would be something good to work for. I think a lot of our trials are quite early on in their phase and development, so it might not be appropriate. But I think that highlights the point is we have... this is great to be doing this podcast because hopefully it just raises that profile because it is... And we go to conferences and present about our results with the role. Because I was speaking to some pharmaceutical companies, they were really interested, but I hadn't really heard about it. But once we were able to talk about it, they actually saw the value in it, which is great from my perspective, because how it's received in industry, it can be variable amongst... I've been quite fortunate, and people have been quite on board with it. I know some colleagues in other parts of the country sometimes find that... there's a little kickback on that, but I think it's partly where we are with GCP changing, which is helping because they've taken out some terminology that was exclusive to doctors. But it's that creating awareness of that role, and it's not just what immediately you might think of a nurse. This is nursing years of with additional skills.
That's brilliant. And can you just tell me a little bit, how do you manage your increased workload? Because that's definitely, I can imagine from a hospital point of view, it's very tempting. I have that person who actually can prescribe, can do all the things that a doctor can do very much.
Yeah.
So it's probably very tempting for them to push you to do more.
Yes and no. I think the role is different to what I was doing before as a research nurse. And so now I'm more established with 3 years in. And the boundaries are more in place. Mm. So in the beginning, because I was not new to being a nurse practitioner, but besides I had a secondment and now acute oncology in that role, and then I came back after that maternity cover to trials, which was a great exposure into that role, and then moving back into my normal area of expertise. So in the beginning, as I'm establishing myself, I felt, oh yeah, I'm being paid more money now, and I need to look, I need to be able to justify my worth, and so maybe it's a little quieter in the beginning, and therefore standing in for doing things that I used to do with the research nurses and things like that. But as you get busier, more established, I was able, with the team support, very much able to step back from that. So I'm kind of essentially treated like one of the doctors, one of the fellows. So I'm not expected to get involved in the research nursing side anymore. And the time I get back from not either being around delivering treatments or not planning, booking appointments, cancelling appointments, arranging travel for somebody, all of that time that I've gained back, it kind of balances out. So yes, I'd say my responsibilities are different. I don't think I'm necessarily busier. And I also, there's potential to be busier, but it also gives me a lot of time and creativity when we haven't got clinics. There's a few days a week when there's no clinics. Once I'm up to date on the things I need to do in relation to the patients I've seen, their letters and their documentation, the filling in the trial documentation for that, I can get involved in other things, like, because part of advanced practice is that we help and we fulfill the clinical side of things, but we also have what they call four pillars. So the other three pillars are leadership, management, our own research, and education. So being able to get involved in education and teaching, instructing, as not just within our unit and promoting trials in the trust, but other areas like life support and things like that, is really quite fun to do every so often. It's, variety is the spice of life, right?
Yeah. So I agree.
I'm very lucky to be able to do things like that.
That's brilliant, and it's really good that you have opportunity to explore different things, so you're not just stuck into doing the same thing. So my other question was going to be about physician associates. You probably heard there's been quite a lot on the news about it.
Yeah.
I read on the NHS website, particularly for these, what is a physician associate, and it says that people who have nursing background, but also those who have science background could qualify to become physician associates, and their role involves, again, collecting medical history, analyzing lab results, performing physical exams, diagnosing illnesses, which I find quite, and other activities. So where do you see that role of the physician associates, and in comparison to nurse practitioners? Do you think that's kind of a solution to the resource crisis that we have in the healthcare? So what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, so my awareness of a physician associate role is that it is, as you say, you can have a relevant first degree, and then it's, I think it's a 2 years master's program, and then you're out in practice. So one of two key differences, I guess, is as to why someone might choose to be a physician associate. If you're a nurse already, personally, it doesn't necessarily make sense to train to be a physician's associate, because you could train to be an advanced practice nurse instead. So you can do all of the things that physician's associate could do, but you've also got significant many years of nursing and direct patient care experience. The biggest difference currently, I'm open to be corrected, but I'm led to believe that physician's associates currently can't prescribe medications. So it's not part of their normal training. And I think that's some of those media cases that you've had in the news of things getting misdiagnosed or wrong treatment or whatever, is partly, it's not just partly that, but then, you know, they see somebody, but then they have to go to a doctor and get a prescription, and that doctor might not see that patient as well. And then that's kind of duplicating work. So there's always going to be an area where that could happen. Even as a doctor, you might make a mistake, and nurses will also make mistakes. So it's not saying one is better than the other. It's just a different route into that, but that would be some of the limitation. And I think, is it you asked whether it was the solution to
yeah,
the resource crisis.
Yeah.
What crisis are you talking about?
Anyway, no, of course not. I'm imagining things.
I again, I'm going to sit on the fence on this. I don't think it necessarily, I don't think having advanced nurse practitioners or physicians associates is the solution to training more doctors. I think if we want, as a nation, if we want more doctors, then we need, there needs to be funded, and then we need to make medicine attractive for people to go in and to stay in, because there's a lot of debt that is incurred throughout your training, and the training's longer. So I kind of see these roles as complementary to, we bring physicians associates as well as the clinical practitioners or nurse practitioners, we bring a unique set of skills to the role and perspective. And there's a role for that to exist alongside the traditional medical team and complement it and make your team work more effectively and to be that link, really, the glue between the patient, the relatives, and the nursing staff on the ward, as well as the medical team. So I don't think it's... Yes, they will fill gaps in medical rotas, but it's not the sole answer.
Mm.
I think it's more complicated than that, basically, would say. But I will say, you know, I had an example here that part of my role, because I was seeing patients under supervision when I had the prescribing ability before I completed all of my nurse practitioner degree and training. That came into the forefront during the start of the pandemic. We were in a situation, as you may remember, it's all a bit of a blur, isn't it? But we had about 100 patients on trial, which might not sound a lot, but we're a rare tumour group, so that's a lot for a rare tumour group and in one centre. And we had three fellows at the time, doctors in training, who are research doctors, and all three of them were off sick with COVID at the same time, but I was fine. But that meant I could get on and prescribe and assess their treatment over the phone. Mm-hmm. There was a big sudden move into doing things remotely, and where possible we had bloods done locally and couriered out tablets to people and things. So it meant the service was able to continue, mm-hmm. the contingency. And that same thing happens in clinic. If someone's off sick, then we got that slack. We're still able to see our patients without dragging a consultant down from their other clinics or responsibilities and things. So, and that also, having these roles does free up consultant time, so that consultants in our clinic and our normal NHS clinics can therefore see more of the new patients or the complex patients, and not just trial nurse practitioners, but nurse practitioners in general could be seeing more standard of care patients on long-term established therapy or follow-up patients, surveillance and things like that, without it having to be a doctor, thus freeing up the doctor to see the patients that he really need them.
That's very good.
Just a different take on it. Yeah.
I have to say, I've always been a bit skeptical to getting scientists into healthcare. And the reason for that is, as a scientist, I know quite a lot of scientists, and they don't necessarily have the people skills to be able to work with people. That's always been a challenge.
My exposure to physicians associates is limited. I've come across them very briefly. I haven't come across them personally, but professionally very briefly. We don't have any in trials that I'm aware of here. You, the same token, you can get doctors that are very much science-based. And I would hope, as part of the attraction that makes someone go from pure science into a more patient-facing role, is hopefully some of that desire to be outside of a lab, but interacting with people. So hopefully, conversely, maybe you might even get more people with a better... interpersonal skills than you would traditionally. I don't know. Because I used to be a biochemist and worked in the lab and things like that, and I remember working in an immunology lab, and we were next door to the micro lab, and I just thought, oh my gosh, if I get to that level where I'm more interested in talking to my samples growing in my dish like some of my colleagues were, then this is the wrong thing for me. So that they wouldn't go into that, I don't think. I think it's self-selecting in that sense.
That's interesting. No, that's very good.
But I say limited exposure, so yeah, giving the benefit.
I think it's particularly, I'm saying this because I used to work for a patient organization, which was a support group for HIV-positive gay men. And mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of people being really frustrated with the way they've been treated, just being sent away, and or people wouldn't take into consideration their problems. Or, you know,
that's so a real shame,
thinking from that point of view, you know, from a patient point of view, that they had so many problems dealing with the healthcare stuff. And if you have people who don't have the skills, it could actually make it worse. That's
you're right. Yeah, and actually, I'm going to bring in the results of one of my recent surveys. So we, as it's a new role, I wanted to conduct a survey with patients that I've seen, but also with colleagues, so doctors, consultants, and research nurses, pharmacists, about their perceptions and satisfaction with this new role. And interestingly, they're all very positive, actually, and I will eventually get around to writing it up and publishing it. It's going to some conferences in UConn's in Birmingham later this month or next month. But there was a lot of tasks that I described, like explaining scan results or support outside of clinic, prescribing medication, consent examining me, many different things that I do and sometimes a doctor would do as well. And I asked them to rate, how does it compare? Worse, the same, or better? And fortunately, nobody said worse. The majority said better or the same. So the really good responses, but the themes that were coming out were that those things that you're alluding to, the supporting skills, the listening skills, and giving time, spending, that was one of the biggest comments they said. They felt valued, they felt as if they were the only person on the trial and they had all the time in the world to discuss how they felt, not just how the treatments make them feel, but just how they're getting on with life, being on a trial with a treatment that probably won't cure them, with an incurable type of cancer, but just getting on with data. And I think because nurses have hopefully bring a wealth of clinical experience to that role and bedside experience, I would hope, and I don't want to generalize, but I would hope that that comes through in the patient relationships.
That would be brilliant. Yeah, if it happens.
This is what they were saying in the survey, which was great for me to hear that back, because sometimes you can think, oh my gosh, is this really helping? Isn't it? And actually, what it showed, actually really what that survey showed to me is like, I was thinking I need to see vast numbers of people to justify my existence. And I do see a good number of people comparable with the fellows. But what more importantly, what I got from that was actually a lot of the free text feedback is they value time, the time and continuity, that they don't have to explain everything again. They can just take off where they left off and giving them that time to be listened to.
Mm. No, that's definitely something. And that's something that I heard back from patients. They just needed someone, you know, sometimes even to explain things to them. Or they wouldn't ask because they're worried.
They're scared to ask a doctor sometimes to appear like one, they're bothering them, two, asking too many questions, or three, they just don't want to. I think we don't want to appear that we don't know something in front of other people. Not everybody, I learned from them, not everybody goes through scan results in any detail. It's just like, the scan's fine and that could be it. Whereas I give them the report. Then I'd walk them through it word for word and try and translate the radiology talk into meaningful English.
Yeah.
And so I thought everybody was doing that, but not everybody does.
Well, I was doing that for the support group, so...
There you go. That where they want to know that, because, you know, obviously as the patient results, they have a right to know that and to receive that in a way that they can make sense.
Yeah, no, that's definitely, and I think you very much answered that question, but I'll still ask you anyway.
Oh yeah.
What motivates you to work in clinical research?
That's a good question, and I had a little think about that. I said in the beginning, like, I started off as a biochemist, and when I was 16, this is going to sound so sad now, but when I was 16, I was a bit of a geek, I guess. I remember going on an immunology summer school, and at the time I wanted to do medical research. Because I wanted to make a cure. You know how enthusiastic and optimistic you are when you're that age. And I was advised by the doctors there, oh yeah, that's great, you want to do immunology? Okay, but first do biochemistry, then you can do your master's in immunology. It'd be a good grounding. I was like, okay, yeah, let's do that. And I don't know when to start biochemistry. And I was like, oh my God, all those things I hated at A-level, Krebs cycle and this and that. That's my whole degree, but fortunately it's very modular, so I got to avoid a lot of biochemistry and do the things that interested me within that. So I worked for a bit as a monitor and in some labs as well for industry. But what I missed was having some meaningful contact with people and helping people. And I was quite inspired by one of the research nurses at one of the sites I used to monitor. It's actually at this hospital. And I was inspired by her compassion to the patients, because you know, we never get to meet the patients when you're monitoring. Mm. You read all about them, you get to know them a bit from the notes. But when you take that data out of the hospital back to the office or to the sponsor, it's all anonymized. So they are literally a number. And that didn't sit right with me. And I was inspired by that. So I looked into nursing. And then after about being 8 or so years in different clinical environments, I got back into research nursing. Well, got into research nursing on a different
level.
Different side of the fence, so to speak. And I think particularly for sarcoma is fascinating from a disease point of view, because it is so many different types of diseases under that term of sarcoma, and they can all behave very differently. They're very challenging in the metastatic setting to treat, and there's no cure, and they can come up anywhere in the body. Mm-hmm. So that makes it fascinating, but it also means, like, we will only get cures through research. We're only going to make advances through research. And that to me, there's a great need for that, because it really, what that translates is, whilst we get to know our patients very well, and there's a lot of laughter in clinic, and you get to know them, you're really pally, but underneath the surface, and at the beginning, whenever, you know, this is the worst time of their life. Been told they have this metastatic disease that hardly anyone's heard of, and there's no treatment for it that works effectively. So not just to actually getting on with their treatment, but supporting them, being alongside, not necessarily having all the answers sometimes, because we don't, even the doctors don't have all the answers with treatment side of things, but being that source of support in clinic, outside of clinic, really helps people. You mentioned about the helplines and things. Mm. You know, we all give the same to our patients on trial. You know, they know they can contact us Monday to Friday, and we'll respond to them. And we're always at the end of a phone or an email. Things. Mm.
That's great, and I see not many people, but I see quite a few people like you, who are really motivated, and they see the meaning of research. Not everyone is like you, by the way. You probably know that already. But yeah, I see some people who find it really important from their point of view, like fulfillment and really trying to help and do something for the patients. And we need more people like you. That's what I can say.
My boss might disagree with you on that. One might be enough, she might say. We couldn't have more than one of her, that's for sure. There's not enough space in the world for that. She'll hit me now.
And my very last question, Stefan, I'm going to ask you is, do you think there's enough awareness about the nurse practitioners? Do you think nurses are familiar with this as a career opportunity for them. Is there something that we can do to bring more awareness?
Yeah, I mean, I think within the general setting, so outside of trials, there is a strong awareness of advanced practice roles for nurses and for other allied health professionals. But it's baby steps in terms of research. And who knows, there's maybe about 6 of us in this trust doing that role. But nationally, I can't tell you an exact number, but I know that we have a national forum that meets twice a year that is peer-to-peer sort of support, and people in training, qualifying, and people who are qualified. Some of them are nurse consultants and principal investigators already. So in a sense, we're doing it. We're doing it already, but everywhere else needs to sort of catch up a little. And of course, there needs to be safeguards in and things like that. And at the moment, the nursing regulator, I can only speak from the nursing side of things, but the nursing regulator is reviewing its standards around advanced practice and how that may be regulated in the future and what's the best thing. So that, you know, there's no one size fits all at the moment. There are changes now that a lot of the courses are accredited and means they meet a certain standard. And if you've done the course before it was accredited, you can apply to do get more extra work and reflections and essays and critiques to get a voluntary digital badge scheme up from the Centre for Advanced Practice, which is one of these NHS offshoots. But it would be interesting to see what the regulator turns around and says. So I think, what would I change within research nursing? Yes, I said earlier on, career progression for a research nurse is very limited. It's when I first started, you'd go in as a band 6, possibly a band 7, depending on what trust you're in. So you might be a research nurse or a senior research nurse or a team leader, and that's about it. Now, within our trust, the research nurses, because we're all oncology, we take on what's called the key worker role, which is what, if they weren't on trial, patients would be under a clinical nurse specialist. Mm-hmm. So it's principally being that the sole and the main point of contact if they have any problems during their treatment or from their disease. So we take on that role if they're on trial. We'll do all of that as well. So, yeah, raising the awareness, really, but that's also raising the awareness from industry and for industry, hopefully, to... It's right to be curious about the role. It's right to ask the questions. But if we can hopefully... If the setup within the individual site is good, then we can demonstrate the steps we take to oversee and govern that role. So, for instance, when I am in some of the consenting, I've done the consent training course, and we came up as a group saying, well, we want to demonstrate some oversight from our PIs if they're delegating us to consent. So we came up with a document that basically will complete, and it will sort of highlight what the study is, the purpose of the study, the risks, benefits, alternative treatments, and so forth, but in a patient-friendly language. So that I can explain it to the patient. And then I get my PI to sign that, and then I get the head nurse for research in all of the trials that we have to sign off as well. So it's when I remember talking to a pharmaceutical company about that, and they were very surprised and actually reassured by that level of oversight and governance. And in terms of my prescribing practice, that's really regular. It's not like, hey, you've got your qualification, off you go. No, we have to work within the scope of practice within our specialities, and that needs to be agreed with our principal investigator, but our head consultant for the unit. And then it goes to a non-medical prescribing committee, and then you appear before the committee and they'll ask you questions if there's anything. And it all needs to be linked to relevant national and local guidelines. But we have to do that every year, so we have to keep that up to date, and it has that additional oversight. And you wouldn't get that in medicine, you know, once you've got your GMC number, off you go. So I'm not saying that's not to imply it's better, but I want to put out there that whilst historically there can be misuse of the word advanced practice, as it's evolved over time, what you are getting if you delve deeper, hopefully within a trial setting, people are clued up enough to know, actually, we do need to demonstrate, one, we're qualified, two, that we're being safe for industry, for our partners in industry. And I think in time, well, we have to wait and see, but I think there will be some form of regulation or protection over that role from the nursing regulator, at least. So watch this space.
That'll be very interesting.
We're doing it. It works. It's been impressively received both from a patient perspective and from a clinician perspective. In fact, nearly 2/3 of the clinicians said they wanted more in clinic. So, and that really surprised me. I was like, oh, okay, fine.
So you're doing fantastic work then.
So we're doing some good work.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much. I think that we've learned a lot. I've learned a lot for sure from you. I think the main key messages from our discussion today is that research nurses have that opportunity to become nurse practitioners if they're interested. There is a path for them to do that. So it's important, especially for those who are very experienced and they're looking to take some more responsibility, so they have that opportunity. That's one thing. And the other, I think, very important thing is for the industry to understand that the nurse practitioners are fully qualified. They can operate as a sub-investigator. And in some cases, they could be even a principal investigator, depends on the study, type of the study. So I think that these are the key points that I want to stress to people. And thank you for coming to speak in person.
Well, thank you. And thanks once more for the opportunity.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners.